It's Bigfoot Collectors Club with Bryce and Michael. I know a ghost story or two.
Running and gunning today.
Whoa, that's very violent, Bryce.
It's an expression of post-haste, man.
That's fine. Hey, welcome back to Bigfoot Collectors Club, episode 39, the podcast where we talk to amazing guests about their personal paranormal history and share tales of high strangeness. I'm your host, Michael McMillan. With me always is your other host,
Bryce Johnson.
And our trusty producer,
Riley Bray.
Hey, guys. How was your Labor Day weekend?
Oh, it's good, man. How was yours? That sounded like bullshit.
Great banter. I ask you a question.
Yeah, fucking great.
You threw it right back at me.
I'm just glad the summer's over and my kids are back in school full time.
Yeah, you were single dadding it for a little bit.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it was like a daddy daycare towards the end of the summer, but It gets to be a lot.
Those kids really made you prioritize your family over this podcast.
It's amazing.
I'm upset about that.
What mothers do. I just want to say that. There's like, even at my, like, even at running at like 120%, I still can't like accomplish to the quality level that my wife does. It's like,
I believe it.
It's amazing. It's amazing what they do.
So. I think we've all learned that.
Shout
your
out to
wife,
moms out there.
I think we've all learned that your wife is like a million times better than you are.
Yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. Yeah. If only she believed in Bigfoot, you know.
then you'd be in trouble, buddy.
Then I'd be in trouble. I know, totally.
Well, we have an amazing guest with us today, sitting here in the studio, silently nodding along. You know he's a professional. He's waiting for his introduction. I would say this is the better half of Acker and Blacker. Oh, we had Ben Acker on previously. He's the co-writer and creator of Thrilling Adventure Hour. He's the host of the Writers Panel podcast, and he has a new comic book series called Hex Wives coming out in October for Vertigo, which is awesome. That's an imprint of DC Comics. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ben Blacker.
Woo! Thank you.
What's up?
Long-time listener.
Oh, no.
First time. I love
that's
the show.
Awesome.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
really?
Dude. Yeah.
Oh, that's God,
there are no
right.
surprises
really cool.
here.
All right, cool.
Love that.
So you know I'm going to beat you to every segment.
Oh, that's awesome.
I would actually enjoy it if you did. Go ahead and host the show.
You don't trust Bryce anymore.
I don't. He's been a stranger.
For good reason.
First of all, what
for
is happening reason. With your microphone
thank
over
you.
There,
thank
Bryce?
You. No, don't
you
worry
You don't
about
even
it.
Know how to podcast
how
anymore.
How dare you, sir? How dare you, sir?
Is this your first time?
Yeah, it's always my first
we've
time.
We've been a little out of sync because we also do, you know, shows up on the Patreon, and I think, Bryce, you've been missing, other than the Bigfoot Movie Club, I think we haven't had you for like 6 episodes over there.
Oh, that's not true.
Really?
Yeah. Let's review, and also, this is a good chance to plug the Patreon. We had Bigfoot Boys this summer in August. Mm-hmm. You were in that. Then we had Campfire Stories, Church Lady Werewolf. You were not in that.
Oh, yeah, no, I wasn't.
Then we had Riley Went to Burning Man. You were not in that. We had Bigfoot Movie Club.
Okay,
you were
I don't
that.
Like this game.
And then we had a bonus with Maggie Lawson that you were also not in.
Well,
this is
you
the
know.
Segment where we shame Bryce for having
I
know. A family.
I think I'm angry, and it's just funny. Coming out right oh now. God. I'm sorry. I'm
no,
coming at you.
Okay.
Know what? I'm the one who's running and gunning, and I apologize.
Oh. All good. All
I'm here
good.
To interview new co-hosts. we're going to see how this goes for the
oh
next 40 minutes.
Ben's
then...
our crisis management for today.
Yeah, totally. He's I'm still like getting over how amazing your names are. Ben Blacker and Ben Acker.
You're going to have to get over it.
I know, I'm going to have
well,
to get over it. I think that's so...
We've been working together for 15 years,
it's
so
incredible.
We almost never hear it.
Right, I know. It must not be a first for you guys.
I'll be the first to admit it. So Ben Acker usually contacts me much more than Ben Blacker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't like to leave my house.
We socialize sometimes, and he'll text me. And literally when Ben got in touch because he's like, hey, I'd love to come to the show, which of course we'd love to have Ben Blacker on the show. I thought
it's a get. I'm a get.
You're a huge get.
Hell yeah.
And but my like nonchalant, I'm reading the email as I'm like walking the dog. I just glaze over Blacker and I think it's Ben Acker. And I'm like, boy, he really wants to be back on the show real fast.
He did love doing the show. He said you guys treated him real well. I love the episode.
It was a great episode.
It was a good episode.
That was Socorro Saucer, one of my favorite stories. Anyway, it took about two emails until I until Ben was like, dude, this isn't Acker. And I was like, fuck. I'm so sorry.
It's nice.
Unbelievable.
Does that happen a lot?
Yeah, all the time.
You're name twins.
We are.
You guys knew what you were getting into when you signed up to be a partnership.
Well, also, nobody reads emails. Let's be honest. Like, no. Well, we don't have time. We're reading them on our phone.
Yeah. I was going through it very quickly.
I'm like big on like now I use a lot of bold and underline in my emails. I'm
it's
like
a good idea.
They won't read the body. Let me just bold a few of the highlights.
Yeah, you did a great job with the email to Bobcat Goldthwait for the show. I just want to mention.
Oh,
that.
Thank
great
you very
job.
Much. Very you know, good. The correspondence.
Bold stuff really worked. All right, before we get into our guest's personal paranormal history, yeah. I hear that we have some Riley
BCC news.
Well, that was great.
Sorry, I got excited there. I really did. So my father-in-law Ian sent me this, which I thought was great because he lives in Vancouver.
Are you having a hard time with that?
Yeah, the mic is
Bryce is halfway slouched halfway.
Well,
down
and I'm slinking down to like get to it.
It looks like you're in a crib and you're sucking on a bottle.
Oh, but I also want to be able to see my my laptop there. Okay.
All right.
So so this came out August 15th, and the headline reads, Bigfoot lawsuit lacks an air of reality, say BC lawyers.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
This is sort of an update to the larger story with Claudia Ackley up in Washington State as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is Todd Standing.
Yeah.
And he is the filmmaker of Discovering Bigfoot. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Todd Standing, but he's had some kind of notorious rapport throughout the Bigfoot community. He's gotten what some believe to be amazing Bigfoot videos and stuff. But then on the other hand, some of them are like, you know, completely laughable, some might argue.
You remember how, like, in the original Return of the Jedi, the Ewoks didn't blink? They just looked like, you know, they were cool costumes, but they just had sort of doll faces, you know, teddy bear faces. There's a couple photos from this guy that look a little like that.
So that headline came off the one the day before. Tracker takes BC government to court to prove Bigfoot exists. A BC man is taking the provincial government to court for allegedly damaging his credibility and not acknowledging that the Sasquatch, also known as Bigfoot, may exist. Tracker and documentarian Todd Standing will make his case that the species is real Tuesday when he appears in a new Westminster courtroom. He says he has evidence way beyond a reasonable doubt that the species exists. If this was a murder trial, I would just annihilate it, he told CTV's Your Morning on Tuesday. I'm going to overwhelm them with evidence.
That's a really weird quote.
I know. It really is.
He's either going to march into the courtroom and pull down his pants, or march into the courtroom and pull down his pants and just take a giant shit.
Why is anyone giving this guy any creep? Oh, good God.
Oh, so he's shocked. He's shocked at the realness.
The photo is
You must
insane.
Be showing him the Muppet one.
That
yeah.
looks like a Muppet.
Yeah, that's some Dark Crystal shit.
Yeah, that is some Dark Crystal shit.
Why is anyone listening to
now,
this
Now, what's strange about
this
that,
so, sad.
So in that same documentary, he has this one Bigfoot that he's with a videotape he's filming.
This
and
is
it's
his
like,
second attempt.
And it's like through trees. Let me see.
This one.
Oh,
that people think
that's
him.
That's a bad. Yeah,
people think it's him in makeup.
Yeah, there was
obviously.
There
that
was
doesn't
one.
Even look like the same species.
I think it's a tree in makeup.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're not convinced at those photos. I've seen the movie. It was actually a pretty interesting movie.
It's fun, but it feels very.
That's the
once
thing.
Once I got to these, I was like,
you can't do it.
And I'm turning it off.
Doesn't this make you so sad that like there's stuff going on in this world and this guy's like. I'm taking this to court.
I know.
I have to prove this.
Well, wait a minute. I am in favor of Claudia Ackley in Northern California. I'm in favor of her. She's trying to do the same thing with California, get Bigfoot recognized as official wildlife. because she and her kids have seen one like once or twice. And I actually kind of believe her story. She's not passing
Are
along.
Are these people who live in the woods?
Yes.
Like that movie from a couple years ago?
Well, what made
sure. Not what I was thinking.
No, that. Oh, I
what
can't
made this guy
called,
interesting
anyway.
Was that he's like a professional tracker and, you know, that he learned from the First Nations people. So he would actually go out on his own and without a gun or anything like that.
Thank
and,
God.
You know, and he would go like deep into the woods
and
wear like his ghillie suit and like, you know, sniper in.
I mean, like the one thing that movie shows is like he does seem to know his way around the forest.
Oh, for sure.
Like, all right. I couldn't camp to the extreme measures that he does.
No, hell no.
I couldn't camp.
Well, and another bit of controversy, too, is that...
that's straight.
You know, he partnered up with Les Stroud, the survivalist. So you get this mixed bag of, like, credibility, you know?
So what's happening?
I don't know that you do.
Yeah.
Oh, Les Stroud's the man. Excuse me.
Yeah, but he got paid to do this, presumably.
And who,
yeah,
well, who's
suppose.
Les Stroud?
Les Stroud is the survivalist. I don't know if you've ever watched those shows on like that, but he's so
like a Bear Grylls.
Better than Bear Grylls. Like Bear Grylls had a
yeah, that's right.
Better than Bear Grylls had like a film crew with him. Les Stroud was notorious for just being out on his own individually and being in the woods and doing these great survival shows. Not only that, is that he has an two incredible Bigfoot encounters that turned him into a believer. So as much times as he spent out in the woods, he finally came out and he was like, you know, I've had a couple experiences that really turned me around and raised the hair on the back of my head.
That's the kind of credibility I can get behind.
Yeah, for sure.
Like he actually has credibility. Yeah. Let me ask you guys a serious question.
Okay.
If these lawsuits go the way that the people in them want them to,
mm-hmm.
and both, you know, Vancouver and California are like, okay, sure, Bigfoot's real.
Right,
you did
right.
It. Good
right.
job.
Totally.
Like, how do we make these people go away? Do this? Okay, great, sure. Where does that leave you guys? Like, what does that do for the Bigfoot community?
Not much. Because I think, actually, even in Washington State, he's recognized in their guide of flora
he
and
or
fauna.
She.
He or she. Bigfoot or is they. Actually recognized as a real species within the flora and fauna catalog. So,
is that right?
Yeah, I believe so.
But nobody gives a shit. Like, it doesn't change the fact that
it
this
doesn't
is
change
a
anything. And then they'll put some.
No,
phenomenon.
He's not going to emerge through a light portal and go, finally, no.
Legalized.
You see me.
I feel seen. All I needed was some legal documentation. Suddenly, it's sort of a reverse Thanos situation where just Sasquatch start appearing all around us.
That would be
Whoa.
Awesome.
That would be the best case scenario.
Yeah, that would be great.
Well,
I've been with you this whole time.
Anyway, that's his story, and they kind of laughed him off. None of it has convinced the BC Fish and Wildlife, which has refused to recognize.
And you know, if there's like a bunch of Canadian barristers laughing at you, then you're a real sure. schmuck.
They're
you're
very polite.
Schmuck, yeah. So that's the Todd Standing taking the BC government to court.
All right. Yeah. Well, it's good to know.
Good luck.
We need to contact Claudia Ackley. I want to get her on the show.
Get her on the show.
All right, we'll do it.
Use bold in your email.
I looked at Riley. Yeah,
like, underlines.
Get on that, Riley.
On it. You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Well, Ben.
Yes.
This is why you came here. What is your personal paranormal history?
Oh, you guys, I had a ghost.
Really?
No joke.
You have a baby ghost?
No joke. In my old place where my wife and I lived for 7 years. This was I think a 1924, 1926, duplex in the Koreatown Hancock Park area. And, we lived on the first floor and we both independently reported seeing, a man standing in the hallway who was dressed in like, I would say like 50s, businessman garb, like salesman.
Like a Don Draper ghost.
A little tackier.
Mm. Okay.
A little tackier. Yeah. Like it made me think like mid-50s, even early 50s.
Not as slick.
Wow.
Not as slick. Holding a like sales case.
So like Roger Sterling trying to make it.
Exactly. Like if there were a prequel.
Right.
Which I would totally watch.
Yes.
Like a Better Call Saul
Sterling's
for Roger
Sterling.
Come
on.
You sold that in the room.
Come on, let's do it.
But we both reported this independently to other people. And I forget who was like, you guys need to talk to each other.
Wow. Right, you know, right.
One, you saved our marriage. Yeah. But then in that same, and it was by like, there was a long hallway and a closet at the end of the hallway. And We both saw it in the same spot, and our dogs would go and like bark at that spot and scratch at that spot. And it didn't feel harmful. Like, it was a very benevolent feeling. Sure. It was just a dude hanging out, standing in the corner with his case.
What do you make of that?
A friend who is into ghost bullshit, because we don't believe in ghosts.
Right.
We believed in our ghost,
right.
But we generally don't right. believe in ghosts.
I love ghost bullshit. I love
That's
that.
That's funny, because usually when you see one, it opens your mind up to the concept as a greater whole.
Yeah. You would think. Not so much. Though.
Interesting. So wait. All right. Yeah.
So a friend was like, maybe, like, she said she thinks that ghosts are, like, attracted to metal, and there was an incident in our kitchen where, like, first the electricity went out, and then the metal tray slid out of the toaster. We were not in the room. We were in a different room, and the metal tray slid out of the toaster, and that made her think, like, maybe metal was attracting them or was involved or something, but it was just this one ghost.
Maybe he was selling magnets. Wow. And his briefcase
of 1950s
magnet salesman. Yeah.
Magnets were new to America.
Refrigerators were really becoming a big thing.
Yeah.
So when you guys told each other about what you had seen,
the fuck out.
Yeah. Tell me about that. Like, that must have been crazy.
It's like when you are, like, getting to know someone and you're describing something you have in common, because we could not believe that he had sort of a plaid jacket,
right?
Like a dark plaid jacket. Like, we were describing the same thing, and
you guys experienced
insane.
The same thing,
but it never felt like, oh shit, we have to get out of here, or who are we going to call? Like,
Ghostbusters,
right?
Oh, I wish I had thought of that. Like, we were just like, oh, we have another roommate.
Right.
And we didn't see him all the time. And in fact, like, the last 2 or 3 years, we didn't feel it at all. So I have no idea, but it was very specific.
Did it spark your interest in the paranormal or ghosts or anything?
No, I'm good. No, I was afraid to go. Well, I'll tell you this. Here's why it didn't.
Right.
Shortly after that, we were, I guess it wasn't that, it was a little while after that, we were watching The Conjuring on television.
Oh, yeah.
And my wife cannot watch scary stuff.
Mine's
She's
the same
not
way.
Into that.
No way.
So we had to watch it during the daytime. So it was like a Saturday morning. We were watching The Conjuring.
That's awesome.
And if you recall, in The Conjuring, the way the ghost was communicating with the people was through knocks.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were watching these scenes of, like, these scary knocks, and then on our front door, 3 huge knocks. Oh. We jumped, like, ran around the house like crazy people, and then opened the door, and it was the UPS guy. Oh. He was just like, he must go to, like, so nonchalant, like, sign, please. Like, he must hear people screaming on the other side of doors all the time.
Right.
We're like, we don't want to investigate our own ghost for fear of what it might open up.
Maybe totally. The people in The Conjuring just had a UPS guy living in their walls.
Yeah, it could. I mean, it's possible.
If you read early drafts, you'll see.
Yeah.
That's a crazy story. I mean,
I have more questions. Okay.
I don't have more answers.
Did the metal coming out of the toaster oven, were you guys sitting in the room and you heard it happen?
Yeah.
Or did you come home and find it?
No, we were in the bedroom and we heard the clatter.
And was that before or after you saw young Roger Sterling?
I think it was, like, pretty far after.
Far after.
Yeah,
so you guys, and you guys had already revealed to one another you had had this. Now, why didn't you tell your wife after the first time? Why?
Because it felt like, oh, this is, like, crazy thing that I imagined.
Right.
And I forget how it came up with someone else. I'm sure it was just telling ghost stories. But,
right.
Like, I was telling my friend that, and she was like, Julie told me about a ghost also.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's a strange story, man.
It was very strange.
Yeah, you guys definitely obviously saw some sort of...
What other secrets are you keeping from Julie?
I won't know until we start to tell another friend. Maybe if we tell you, and then she tells you.
She listens to the podcast.
Exactly.
Mm. She's like, I also have a Bigfoot lawsuit in D.C.
She has several pending. Yeah.
That's wild.
Do you think that ghost was disappointed after it went to all this trouble of
totally.
Haunting you guys, and then you just had this nonchalant response to it?
It picked the wrong people to haunt.
It really did.
No one could be less interested.
You know,
it seems like a lot of effort, and then, you know, it's just like,
that's the nature of
coming
sales.
Back from the dead. Yeah. Exactly.
That's the nature of sales, you know. Yeah, so.
Yeah. I feel like maybe he just wanted to be seen and was satisfied once that, like, we sort of talked to each other, because we really didn't see it or feel it. And then we moved to our new place, And it there's a feeling you get from a haunted place, I think. And we moved to our new place and it just feels dead. And it's also like a 26.
Good dead or bad dead?
Like, good dead. Like
no activity.
There's
dead.
No activity. Like,
yeah,
it's,
that's good.
It's hollow. Like it's
atheist
like
dead.
A sound
atheist
room.
Dead.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
It's empty. It's full of hopelessness.
This house is clean.
Perfect.
Wow. Well, that's wild.
I think you prove our point that we make on the show sometimes that you have people who like experience these things and just move on with their lives
move
and don't
on.
Think much about it. And then
well,
other people
was,
who
yeah.
are like, I have to start a podcast.
It was, right. It was so, it felt so harmless. And I don't know, it felt like the, I don't know, the dumb way to say it is the ghost didn't want us to do anything. Mm-hmm. Like he
right.
wasn't asking for anything. He was just being seen. And as I said, like, I don't believe, I'm not a believer in this stuff. And just, I don't know.
Well,
I can't
how
reconcile.
Yeah, how do you reconcile not being a believer with
because
seeing something like this?
Usually,
seeing
usually,
is believing.
Usually in cases like
oh, right. exactly
when you have multiple witnesses confirming and verifying the same type of details of some sort of phenomenon.
I don't believe those people.
But I mean that sets you on the trail of truth,
with a
you know.
Grade A snob.
Oh, 100%. Those people are kooks. Right. My ghost was real.
Oh no, I'm afraid for my story.
No, but I'm with Bryce on this. Like, how do you? I don't get it.
I'm open to it. I'm open to it being real, but I'm not gonna chase down every story and
right.
think that like I'm a hard sell.
When you say you're open to it being real, are you open to the thoughts of perhaps this might be an entity from the afterlife? Are you open to the thoughts that perhaps this is just some energy apparition? What are you open to the idea of?
After having heard you talk about the various kinds of or explanations for what a ghost could be,
mm-hmm.
I like to think that there's some kind of lingering energy.
Yeah.
I think that makes a kind of sense to me. That said, in my brain...
Yeah.
I know people are just meat.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Mm. Like when you're dead, you're dead.
Right.
Mm, delicious meat.
Yeah. I think we all have a heart out for lunch.
Sure. Sure. No, it's very true. I mean, I'm with you on
but that's what I'm having. That's what I can't reconcile.
I think it's some sort of energy thing too. Listen, Nikola Tesla said to understand the secrets of the universe, think in terms of frequency, vibration, and energy. So, obviously, you know, this guy who couldn't make a sale, it really affected him, and maybe there's some sort of energetic pattern that remains in that spot.
I like that.
Here's the other thing along
like the
those
sequel
lines:
the death of a salesman,
right?
Right. The posthumous sequel
of a salesman.
Totally. Yes.
Sold it in the room.
In putting together this comic book, Hexwives, which is about witches. I've talked to some practicing witches
yeah.
who kind of have similar things to say about like energy and, you know, like vibrations and stuff like that.
Sure.
And I talked about like, what does it mean to do a spell? That seems insane to me.
Yeah.
Right. And the things they talk about, which is sort of like, it's about putting energy in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's about like, if you curse someone, that curse is going to come back on you. So
sure.
you don't want to put that bad energy on someone, but you can do another thing, which, and like at that point you're splitting hairs, but I think there's something to that that is unexplained, but I do ultimately think there is going to be science discovered behind it.
Yeah, I like that. I like that theory. I'm just amazed.
Also, I got to plug the book, which I think I think that's important.
Well, when,
totally.
So wait, when is it comes out in October?
I'm glad you asked, Mike. It comes out on Halloween.
Oh,
ooh,
awesome.
Appropriate.
Yeah, yeah. It's about witches. It's if Samantha from Bewitched didn't know she were a powerful witch and was being held as a suburban housewife against her will.
Oh, that's great. So sort of Stepford Wives.
Yes.
Meets
Bewitched.
Great, love it. I love that. Also, he's wearing his Bewitched T-shirt.
I'm on brand.
Speaking of Halloween, wasn't it last Halloween that we ran and gunned to get our first episode
ran
on the? I tried to do
ran
cast
and
dancing.
And
run and gunned. Ran and gunned to get our first episode of BCC on the air.
Yeah,
right?
Is that right?
And
yeah. It'll be our 1 year anniversary.
It will be, and our 1 year anniversary falls on a Wednesday this year.
Cool.
So I think we're gonna have cooking up an idea for a Halloween special.
Oh, dude!
Yes.
Well, we'll
celebrate
definitely...
our 1 year. That's great because now Halloween, every Halloween is gonna be our birthday.
Yeah, that's great. I
this
love that.
This is fucking perfect.
Righteous.
It's like we planned it.
Yeah. I love it.
Congratulations.
Well, and you too.
That's a feat.
Yeah.
Like a year.
We're coming
a year
up on
doing
a, year.
A podcast is pretty good.
And thank you very much.
I mean, I just celebrated 400 of the writers panel, but a year is great, you guys. A year is great.
So tell our listeners a little bit about writers.
Do you not want to talk about Bigfoot?
No, we'll get to it. We already have. Tell our listeners a little bit about writers panel too.
Writers panel is a podcast that I put out every week in which I talk to writers about mostly television writers about the business and process of writing television. If there is a program that you love, I found the audience to be sort of 70% writers or people who want to write for television and 30% people who love DVD extras.
Right.
Like the fans of that stuff.
I miss those DVD extras.
Yeah, totally. Me too.
The knock in DVD sales is really... stolen a lot of the fun stuff about what made DVDs cool in the first place.
I agree. So people who like that stuff, I think, will like the podcast. And if there's a TV show you love, I have had the creator or one of the strong voices from that show on the podcast.
That's great.
How often do you guys talk about, like, Betty and Barney Hill's abduction or, like, the Zanfretti?
Constantly.
Okay, great.
I edit them out of. I edit out of most podcasts, but it comes up almost every time.
Sounds like we could use some of that on our bonus section.
Yeah, totally.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I can't believe you saw a ghost and you still don't believe in ghosts.
That's amazing. First time.
That's a weird. You're a weirdo.
I like that though.
But you're.
I'm complicated.
That makes me like you more.
I get it. Okay. Well, we're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, it's time for
High Strangeness. Right?
Yeah.
Is that a question mark exclamation point type thing? You know it was.
You're already curating your Bigfoot museum in your head. I can see it. It's happening.
All right. Welcome to High Strangeness. It is my turn this week, and I'm excited to bring you... what I think is one of the most fascinating cases within the last decade, perhaps more. As Ben
took a bite of his Long John, like,
if you look up nonplussed eating a donut, that's
prove it. Trump.
This is how that goes.
Oh no, yeah, I'm screwed from the start.
Listen, you brought some delightful donuts. I didn't want to eat on the microphone. Oh, well, Ben, you do your intro.
I got what his look to that ghost must have been like. I could see through you, but
there are donuts. So yeah.
Well, Ben, we have a surprise for you. The ghost is here today. Come on, sit down. Time to confront your beliefs.
Amazing. Anyway, this is called the Ariel School Phenomena.
Areola?
Have you heard?
School Phenomena?
No, not Areola. Ariel School Phenomena. This is a school in Rua, Zimbabwe, South Africa.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
When we did the John E. Mack episode with, I believe it was guest Maria Thayer. Shout out Maria Thayer.
Boo. Yep.
You mentioned this incident at the school.
That's
correct?
Right. Okay, that's cool. Right. And John Mack, he plays an integral part of this story. Ben, for those who don't know, Johnny Mack is a. Is a Harvard psychiatrist and a Pulitzer Prize-winning author who wrote a book on the abduction phenomena. And later in his career, he became sort of like it fell into his lap, but he became really interested in interviewing and working with people who have tales of abduction.
Oh, like that guy on the X-Files.
Yes, okay. Yes, and he came to some pretty staggering...
Put it in a language I can understand.
Yes, absolutely. Well, he came to some
pretty... You can pretty much follow up anything that we're going to say with, oh, like that guy on the X-Files. Right.
Yeah, you know, he was a skeptic that kind of came into some staggering conclusions that though he can't prove the physical existence of aliens, something is absolutely taking place and happening. Anyway, so let's jump in. On September 16th, it was 2000.
September 16th, September?
Yeah, 1994. At approximately 10:15, over 60 plus children witnessed a strange silver glowing craft kind of landing just outside their outside their field, and a couple of beings exiting the craft. And this sort of sparked the Ariel School phenomenon. Now, they were all on the morning recess, And what's weird about this is that all the adults from the school, they were inside during a staff meeting. So really, there's about 200 kids, you know, outside on the playground. When they see in the light sky these like kind of three silvery objects, and they're kind of like floating around in the sky. One of them seems to like come down and descend right into a field that's really only about 50 yards from where they're playing, and they kind of hear this kind of loud noise. And outside the vehicle,
had it lost it.
They see
it's the loud noise.
They see. No,
I got it. I worked in fake radio for years.
We are all being silently judged.
They see this 1 meter tall kind of being exit the craft. Now, all these witnesses, these are kids from about first grade to seventh grade, so varying in ages from about 5 to 13. And they're a mixed culture, you know, kids from Australia and New England and Africa. And
but they're all, I'm sorry, are their ages again?
So they range from like first grade to seventh grade.
So unreliable.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, but you'll get to a point that kind of like that prods the story later is that, you know, it was really these kids who witnessed this. There wasn't any adult witnesses. There was the night before. 3 airline pilots logged in reporting seeing this strange glowing orb outside their left wing, and they called that in. Not only that, two days earlier, there would report a UFO streaked across the sky over southern Africa. And now one of the Africa's leading researchers, Cynthia Hind, she did a MUFON investigation on this UFO flap called Case Number 95. This is about the UFOs they saw a couple days before that landed craft in the school of Zimbabwe. But anyway, I want to get back to what happened there. So these kids report seeing like about a 1 meter tall creature wearing this kind of black skin tight suit, kind of described as like what a diver suit would look like. A skinny neck, large head, black almond shaped eyes, and long black hair.
So this is like an alien gray, but with hair.
Yes, absolutely.
Ooh. Somehow that's more disgusting. Yeah.
You know, one kid described it like it looked like Michael Jackson, but with a bigger head. You
Is
know?
It possible it was Michael Jackson?
It could have been.
He does have a jetpack.
He does have sure. a jetpack. Now,
did. He's dead now.
A couple of them was described, where it gets interesting is like, you know, the number of these beings that they witness kind of varies. Most of them agree that it was around 2, but some reported seeing up to 3 or possibly even 4 of these beings. You know, which will kind of get into like sort of what I believe is happening here, that that all this phenomena runs through our own personal filters.
Sure.
You know, so like being the witness to a car crash, you know, we can all witness that same thing and describe it in different ways, you know.
I saw 2 long-haired aliens crash that car.
I saw Michael Jackson crash that car.
Now, they reported one of them kind of just like, you know, sitting on top of this, what they described as a silver disc. And they said one of them kind of approached a group of the kids. And a lot of them became very frightened. A lot of them were...
The kids or the aliens?
The kids. And some of them became pretty excited as well. Now, the only adult on the playground was one of the kids' moms, and she was running what was called the tuck shop, which is just where they sell sweets and treats.
I want
to
hear more about
this. Of this nature. Well, she had a child who went to the school.
I have a real sweet tooth.
Yeah. And
what kind of candy do they have?
They came running up to her. The teachers were all in the staff room for the weekly teachers meeting, and the only other adult on the school premise was Miss Allison Kirkman, a physiotherapist, who was voluntarily running the tuck shop. Shortly after 10, a few of the children noticed something strange beyond the playground, which was dotted with several clumps of trees. Now, besides which, no one knew what dangerous... Oh, anyway, Mrs. Kirkman told that when the children came running into the tuck shop talking excitedly about a small man running around with a band around his head and a one-piece suit, she was totally skeptical. Perhaps, she said, they were trying to get her out of the tuck shop because there were sweets and cakes, of course.
Mr. Museum Curator?
Yes.
We have time for one question.
One question, please.
Okay, I'm just confused.
Yeah.
Okay, so kids are playing on the playground.
Yeah.
3 objects appear in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
One descends.
Yeah.
One or 2 long-haired aliens get out.
Right.
mom is working a... Apparently there's a candy store on the playground?
Yes, that does not face the purview of this field.
Okay.
Right.
Seems weird that the one parent that is supposed to be there watching the kids and selling them candy is looking away from them. Well,
derelict in her duties.
Right. Yeah. Well, so no, she's just running the shop, and the people in charge of the kids was the seventh grade class. They were... They were prefects, so they were watching babies watching aliens. It was part of the assignment, is like the seventh graders would look out over the kids.
Got it.
The learning responsibility.
Okay, got it.
Listen, it is a strange part of this story that there were that all the adult teachers were in a staff meeting, and that this strange event took place when all these kids were out on
the morning
recess.
How this school's being run.
Yeah.
I have questions.
Also,
yeah.
Now, what is what's the alien with the band around its head in a three-piece suit?
No, just a one-piece suit. That's just
one of the ways
the witnesses describe
it. Okay, got it.
Who's a dapper alien?
I'm still thinking about your ghost.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
When I was in third grade and went to summer camp, we swore there was a gremlin in the woods.
Really?
We were wrong.
Oh.
Not the same thing. Listen.
Roughly the same thing.
Listen, no, not at all. Listen, this is 60 kids who witnessed something absolutely phenomenal happen. Now, when they ran back in to go tell the teachers in the staff meeting,
okay, here we go.
The teachers were like, they all thought the kids were making this up.
Of course.
Now, the kids go home that night and they continue to tell their parents. And their parents called the school the next day and said, "What is going on with our kids? They are obviously spooked. They're, you know, they're having these kind of traumatic feelings taking place.
Why are they being watched only by seventh graders?"
Yeah.
Why was no one told Michael Jackson would be making an appearance on the playground?
I should have never said the Michael Jackson.
No, that's part of the fun.
And the candy's too expensive.
Anyway, so one of the parents calls the BBC, and they come
out.
They send out a veteran war correspondent, Tim Leach. Now, Tim Leach is a BBC reporter who has covered genocide and atrocities in Africa. And when he came upon this scene, you know, he basically took the position of like, well, there must be some logical explanation. These kids saw a plane or something had landed. But later he would go on to say that once he started interviewing these kids and hearing these stories, he couldn't get away from that they were telling the truth, that what they had witnessed, they had actually believed they had witnessed. And it had a profound effect on his life and his view of reality. Now, so, which is amazing that they actually sent out reporters. So they sent reporters to this school where they're able to interview the kids. And a veteran MUFON field investigator, Cynthia Hind out of Africa, she had the right mind to, you know.
Bryce isn't reading any of this, by the way. We've talked about this on the show before. You just have this amazing ability to remember names and stuff like that.
Well, I wanted to shoot this one from the hip instead of just read it off the page, you know.
It's also like a great campfire story. Yeah. Like, you are telling this in a riveting way. Oh. It's a lie, like a campfire story. But
how dare you? No. So Cynthia Hind, she has all the kids draw what they witnessed.
That was
my
next question.
And the drawings that they came up with. Now, I brought you a sheet, Ben. I think I'm going to grab it.
You know I only like physical evidence.
Yes, you have to see. Do the aliens do anything? Do they just show up in the field?
It sounds like they frolicked with the kids.
Do they interact with the kids?
Yeah, well, the interaction brings even more to some. Here's some of the drawings that the kids...
Kids are terrible artists.
Kids are terrible artists. What? Now...
These are all different.
Yeah.
This is like someone said, hey, draw an alien. So a bunch of kids drew different aliens.
Well, you know, like I said, they all kind of had an experience or witness of the same thing, yet different.
Whoa.
So now, back to John Mack. He just happens to be in Africa at the time doing a documentary case on a few of Africa's famed abductees when he gets this call that, like, hey, the shit just hit the fan at this aerial school phenomenon. Tim Leach, the BBC reporter, he calls him. He says, I'm in way over my head. You should come down here and check this out.
So Tim Leach was on board.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
He's buying this.
No, he is. Absolutely. Right. And you know, this is a guy who's been shot in the war fields.
That explains.
And so he's... He's seen things.
Oh, is he a ghost?
He might have been a ghost. Now, so John Mack shows up and he starts interviewing these kids, and what they tell him, and you can, this is all on video. He hired a small film crew to film along with him, and so you actually get to see these kids being interviewed. And
is that a link we can throw up in the show notes?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a documentary named Randall Nickerson who's working on the seminal documentary of this case. He's been working on it for about 10 plus years. It's supposed to be finished actually towards the end of this summer, but so I think he's still trying to put the finishing touches on it. It was obviously a project that really had a profound effect and got a little bit out of his hands. It's such a vast thing. Anyway, he's interviewing the witnesses. He was able to track down about 40 or 50 of the witnesses today.
When did this take place?
Remind me.
This took place in 1994.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of these witnesses today.
Back when it was a simpler time.
Yeah, it was a simpler time.
We believed in aliens.
We did. Mm-hmm. And so he's interviewed a lot of them today.
Like that guy on the X-Files.
Yeah, just like that guy on the X-Files.
So John Mack, you know, award-winning Harvard psychiatrist and psychotherapist who has had a tremendous reputation of working with children in his past, he gets there and he goes right to it, starts interviewing these kids. And what he uncovers is like, you know, how did you feel? And a lot of these kids were like, I felt very terrified. One girl said, I had the strange feeling that I was going to be living on an earth where all the trees were cut down and that there would be no air.
Whoa.
And so she's not the only one that said that. You know, a few other of the witnesses described, like one little girl I recall saying, you know, she just, it's like she got this message that that we weren't taking care of our planet, you know. And I don't know if you're familiar with kind of UFO phenomena or lore, but there's a lot of the common threads that run through abductees or experiencers that have to do with environmental issues and stuff like nuclear disarmament and just these big kind of topics that range in that. And anyway, you know, he would ask these kids, you know, how did that happen? Did they say this to you? Or, you know, and one girl just recalled saying, I just remember looking into this being's eyes. One of the beings came really close and just having those feelings in my body. And you know, when she got home, you know, she couldn't help but to, you know, just feel traumatized from having that sort of an experience and, you know, telling her parents like that. So this is one of those strange things. And one witness I wanted to say, her name was Emily Trim, and she spoke at an international UFO Congress in February a couple years back, and she gave an extremely emotional account of her experience. She was crying when she spoke of the encountering ETs floating above the ground, and she said that she fell to her knees before one such being whose face kept changing between that of an alien and that of a lion.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I've never heard anything like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, very strange, right?
Steal that.
One little girl stated that upon seeing the beings, when she got the horrible feeling that we weren't taking proper care of our planet. Oh, and I already said this. But yeah, when pressed by Harvard psychiatrist John Mack how she received these thoughts and feelings, she replied, through their eyes. Now, you know, these are kids who have really no idea of what, mind-to-mind communication is.
Telepathy.
You know, they really don't. And not only that, this is a place and a time where they're not privy to a lot of UFO syndication or research. So they're not.
They probably weren't getting the X-Men cartoon.
No, they weren't, you know. So that's what makes this tale all the more strange.
It was a prep school. They might have been.
True.
Was it Professor Xavier's prep school?
Yeah. Is this a school for gifted youngsters?
Yeah, totally. sorry, I was looking at my notes. You know, I've never been so afraid in my life when I started to realize that there was actually something to this story, said Tim Leach. And that's when he reached out to John Mack. I think I already mentioned that. But anyway, so that's the kind of the tale of the aerial school phenomenon. And these kids kind of reported that this craft just sort of, they never reported it actually landing on the ground, more or less just kind of hovering.
And did they see it take back off and fly off?
No, it just vanished.
Wow. What?
It just vanished. Yeah. So it actually didn't take off and like they see it fly away.
But they were in the sky before, like they mm-hmm. didn't
yeah,
they, land.
Yeah.
So here's my question.
Yeah.
Not to poke holes in this very believable
sure.
story.
Right.
Yeah. Hold that thought.
Yes.
Because when we come back, we'll ask you.
What the hell was that? And we're back asking Ben Blacker, what the hell was that?
Is this school isolated in any way?
Pretty much. I mean, it is kind of, they're in their own little thing. And, you know, I'm not too familiar with the area, but it's a pretty large prep school that's not like, it's not like a suburban area. I mean, you know, it's out in the fields. And
because that's my biggest question. It's like, why did nobody in the surrounding area see these crafts coming from the sky?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the night before,
right? Sure.
Doing investigative findings, that director Randall Nickerson was able to. Three pilots came.
This is the guy from MUFON.
This is the guy who did the documentary Aerial Phenomenon.
Gotcha. The pilot saw something outside.
Yeah, and they actually came forward to him saying, you know, we because there was kind of a media frenzy that took place after this, and they came out and said, you know, we had witnessed off the left side of our wing this like glowing orb is what they described it as. And they all witnessed it. And then it just kind of like took off. Now, this was only one night before. Two nights prior, there was a slurry of people reporting this kind of fireball shaped craft followed by other craft flying through the sky. And there were astronomers and scientists who also reported this, too. So much so that they reported it into MUFON, which Cynthia Hurd made an investigative report of it called Case Number 95.
So did anyone ever provide explanation for those things?
No.
Even false explanation?
You know, some people did come out, just to parlay part of that skeptic side of the story. Some people said that it was, you know, a two-stage rocket reentry mm-hmm. from of Russian descent. But how many times have we heard that old thing? I mean, Jesus.
The old Russian
second stage.
This story reminds me of a couple other playground stories I've heard, which is really strange. The Verona's UFO landing, which was in Russia in 1989. We covered that on Michael Morisi's episode that you were not there for. But then again, 40 to 50. No, I'm just because
it's true.
It's true. You weren't there, but I'm saying
you're not here a lot.
You weren't. No.
Oh, sorry. I was filming.
Yeah. But that was one where forty to 50 witnesses. A craft lands. One to two beings get out. A little robot was there.
Ooh.
And interacted with the group of people and then took off. They'd seen lights around Verona's the night before. And then in the weeks after, there was other sightings of craft and creatures following, like for the next week. Now, some of that we can probably attribute to the press running with it and people getting a little hysterical and wanting to be part of the story. The other story this reminds me of, and this is in Graham Hancock's book Supernatural, which we've mentioned a million times on this
book podcast.
And this one freaked me out. there was a story, and I can't remember exactly where it was. It wasn't in the States. It was either, I think it was in Europe. A bunch of school kids were playing when they were a group of what they call little gnomes descended on the playground driving tiny cars.
Yeah.
And that story freaked me out because when I was a kid, I had a dream that I was on the playground and like gnomes with red pointed hats came out and started playing with all the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I still get goosebumps. It was one of those dreams that stuck with me because it felt more like a weird supernatural nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it wasn't fun. I wasn't excited. It was scary. And it was always one of those that I just remembered and being super creeped out by. And then when I read that in the Supernatural book, I was like, whoa, that must be tapping into some other type of phenomenon. So there are these stories of entities presenting themselves to groups of kids in playgrounds, which is so strange.
Now, I think the big disservice that sort of happened in this case is that, you know, when they went in to tell their teachers and their mentors and their peers, a lot of them just didn't believe them, you know?
Of course.
Which is unfortunate because And you know,
well, there are a bunch of unsupervised children that have access to unlimited amounts of candy.
They're hyped up on sugar.
And you know, Dr. Mack tried to point out, as a psychologist, he's like, listen, we're never going to know what exactly happened, but to discount what these kids are trying to tell us is as lies, you know, is actually harmful to them and a complete disservice to you know, to what they're experiencing, you know. And this documentarian, and I recommend you go check out the site, aerialphenomenon.com.
We'll put it up in the show link.
Yeah, for sure. You know, he's followed up with a lot of these witnesses, and like a lot of these, you know, people who have experienced this sort of traumatic high strangeness, you know, they didn't want to talk about it. And it still had a profound effect on their lives, like 20, 30 years later. Mm-hmm. So much so that they've all gone off. Unlike you, who was not affected, but they've gone off on, like, you know, trying to figure out what something like this might mean.
Yeah,
or
they're all they've
be.
Got to all be what in their late 20s, early to mid 30s.
Yeah,
now.
That's right.
You just pitched a great NBC show.
True.
Good job.
Sold in the room.
Yeah. They were selling shows right and left.
Yeah.
Should have had you on earlier.
Today.
I know.
So totally. what do you think?
Yeah, what's your
Mr.
take?
This is a really interesting story. The details of it make it very believable to me, but of course specificity is key in fiction. Mm-hmm. Because it makes it believable.
Mm-hmm.
There's stuff I had never heard. There's stuff that, as you say, like lines up with other stories. But ultimately, don't you think we would have heard about aliens? Like, if this were going on.
Right.
Has a story like this, which again is very believable, happened in the past 5 years when everybody has a phone in their, has a camera in their pocket?
Well, that's a great question. And to that, I would say yes. there is stuff happening yearly, so much so that hundreds of reports flood into the Mutual UFO Network every year. And the best ones that I like to pick through or that always capture my attention are like something of what happened to you, where you have multiple witnesses describing pretty much somewhat the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of a triangulation of evidence. And yes, there are people who capture photographic video, not only as well as eyewitness testimony, that put a real kind of like damper on the skeptic's plug of like, hey, this is nothing more than mass hysteria or mass hallucination.
Well, there's just so much disinformation out there too, and so much hoax, you know, hoaxery, and it's tough. But I, you know, Ben, I think you bring up a good point too, that like it has felt like it's been a minute since there's been a mass sighting of like a craft landing and beings coming out. Verona's 1989. This was 1994.
Yeah.
Phoenix Lights, which didn't involve any, there's video, but didn't involve any entities. That was 1997. It's been a while since we've had we almost thought we had one in San Diego last week, but it turned out to be military flares.
Is that right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, funny. And the video does seem to be pretty conclusive that that's what it was. But it is interesting, and even the abduction phenomenon itself really seemed to peak in the 80s and 90s. And maybe it's part of a larger pattern that we don't quite understand. Maybe due to the fact that we do have video cameras in our pockets now, that they are sort of fucking with us in some degree.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I mean, who knows? Maybe the Wi-Fi signals that we're carrying around with us are blocking our third eye from being able to see these things. Who knows? I don't know. You know, maybe it's more entwined than we think. I don't
know.
You
make a hat out of foil in it.
Exactly. You can guard against that.
That's true.
You know, I would argue the biggest news to come out in the last year or so was that groundbreaking New York Times article that shed the light that, hey, the government has spent $22 million investigating unidentified aerial phenomena, running a program called ATIP. Which is the Advanced Aerial Threat Initiation Program, funded by three bipartisan senators, and also releasing videotape footage of these strange metallic crafts evading F-18 Hornets.
With audio of the pilots talking about what they're seeing while they're seeing it.
Yeah, so that was kind of a big news break and sort of a validation for a lot of ufologists. And
one
stuff
of the
like
ways
that
Harry Reid got so much funding for that in the Senate was because other senators who had flown planes during World War II, during Korea, during, I don't know, maybe Vietnam, but they talked about seeing that they themselves during wartime seeing craft flying outside their planes that they could not explain. So, you know, I think people see this shit more than we, you know, there's credit for it. And to answer your question, Ben, I think we do know about this stuff. We just don't know what it is. And I think that a lot of that, again, information is being withheld from the public. And also, I think it's just so much shit on the internet, including this podcast, that it's hard to discern what's real and what's not.
Yeah, totally. And for some reason, it doesn't strike a that chord through through everybody that says, hey, this is the most important thing that I should be talking about. But
and
hey,
oh,
go for it. Oh,
I was
do it. You
and
got
we're
it.
Back.
Oh,
nice.
He beat us to it.
Well, with 400 podcasts, he knows when to come in.
The man knows when he's back.
Yeah.
Anyways, a long-haired alien wearing a headband just picked up Michael and took him away.
Had to fly him away. Yeah. So finishing up with the better half of Akron Blacker here with Ben Blacker. And we just discussed the Ariel School phenomenon story. And
which he's conclusively on board with.
He's on
board
with.
It's a pretty
good
story.
Yeah.
I like it. It makes for a good story anyway.
I think so too.
I mean, if anything, that's I think what we're going for is that if believe it or don't, that's up to you. But we just want to tell some good stories,
and you have been for almost a year.
I know, well, I know. Thanks. How exciting! Okay, cool. Well, let's wrap up, and I think you want to tell us again about what's coming out.
Let me do that.
Let's do that.
This book from Vertigo, DC Vertigo, called Hexwives. It's about witches and the insidious ways that men control women. I've learned in doing comics that pre-orders are very important.
Yes.
Right. So I think this will be out within the next couple weeks. But the thing
tomorrow.
To do... Oh, great. Yeah. So listen, if this comic book sounds good to you and my artist is amazing and the colorist is absolutely incredible, so I hope you'll check out at least the first issue. If it sounds good to you, listener, call up your local comic book shop. Tell them you would like a copy of Hexwives. They will order it for you. Then, on Halloween, you go in, you give them $4, and you get your copy of the comic. I don't even care if you read it. Just pre-order it. If you pre-order it, it means I get to do more. Like, I want to do this comic for 100 issues.
Totally. Yeah.
I have so many stories to tell in this world.
And while you're at it, why don't you go ahead and get a copy of Adventure Van
by
our boy Michael.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that.
It's really great.
Our audience is all about these type of stories, and Michael has shown us before, just like you said, that pre-orders can be a huge boon to what we do to keep telling these creative stories. So check it out and do that if you're listening. And also, you know, find us on iTunes and rate and review us because it really helps get our podcast noticed, and we're trying to crack that top 200 thing.
It is. We are getting very close.
Yes.
And it's very exciting to top 200 in comedy. So if you guys wouldn't mind just clicking some stars for us.
Well, you should be in the science category.
This is, I know. I agree with you, Ben. I agree with you 100%.
Is that true?
Yeah, they moved us over to comedy. No.
So,
that's cute. A science podcast.
So for now, we'll have to suffice as a comedy podcast. No, which is what we are.
We
try not to take ourselves too seriously, but.
We take the facts seriously.
That's
facts,
right.
Ben. Facts.
That's right.
I like that. Yep. I like that a lot.
But everything else,
not so much.
That's it for this episode of BCC. Check us out next week. We got a really good one coming.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, you guys. We love you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
See you. Bigfoot Collectors Club is produced by Riley Bray. Our theme song is Come Alone by Sun Eaters, courtesy of Lotus Cool Records. If you like the show, please rate and review us on iTunes. It really helps get the podcast to more listeners. To support the show, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club and unlock multiple reward episodes every month.
Hey, this is Eric Malinsky, host of the podcast Imaginary Worlds. Each episode, I explore different sci-fi fantasy genres, talking with filmmakers, novelists, game designers, cosplayers, comic book artists, and anyone who works in the field of make-believe. I also look at the fan experience, asking, why do we suspend our disbelief? You can subscribe to Imaginary Worlds wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, Heather Ashley here, host of the Big Mad True Crime Podcast. If you're looking for a true crime podcast with all of the details and none of the small talk, you have found your people. Each week, we dive deep into a new case and learn everything there is to know, from getting to know the victim and the impact their case has had on those around them, to the investigation into what happened to them and who is or might be responsible. And if the bad guy looks like he might drink whiskey by a dumpster or has the social skills of an ogre, we say it because we were all thinking it anyway. As the name suggests, we get big mad over true crime, and I would love to have you join our incredible community of listeners with big hearts and zero time for small talk. Subscribe to Big Mad True Crime anywhere you listen to podcasts and listen to new episodes every single Monday.